Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the City of Kingston's ambitious new physician recruitment program.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
At their last meeting, Council received a mid-year update on the city's family physician recruitment program and a request to allocate an additional $400,000 to keep it going. When the recruitment initiative began in 2022, the number of patients without a family doctor in Kingston was holding stubbornly around 30,000, with residents spending hours lined up outside of clinics for a chance to secure care. In this latest update, the city shared that since the program's launch in 2022, a total of 33 new family physicians have been successfully recruited, and Kingston is nearing the milestone of rostering all unattached patients. Councillor Brandon Tozzo opened the discussion around the horseshoe, noting the refreshing sense of accomplishment, a sentiment echoed by Councillor Don Amos.
It's so rare we get a report that's great. And this is actually one of those examples of council and staff working together, allocating the appropriate funding, and us actually tackling and resolving the doctor shortage in the city of Kingston. It's impressive.
It was nice to see a positive outcome and report to value for money. And I think this is one of those health indicators for a city. And when a city can hit a home run like this and actually provide the amount of doctors with the patients that are needed, it works out really well.
Councillor Jimmy Hassan also noted the difference the program has made in what he's hearing from his constituents.
3 years ago, when I got elected as a councillor, that every third complaint we get or the comments we get, the email we get, it was, No doctor. We need the doctors. But today, from last year and a half, I barely hear anything.
As for next steps, the program will be shifting focus to center on succession planning. Like many communities across Ontario, a significant number of Kingston's family doctors are nearing retirement. And without structured support for transitions, thousands of patients could become unattached once again. Over 28% of Kingston's 114 rostered family physicians are aged 60 or older, collectively caring for more than 22,000 patients. Craig Desjardins, director of the city's Office of Strategy, Innovation and Partnerships, explained this next phase of the program before council.
We are actually starting to work in collaboration with the Physicians Council, the Primary Care Council, as well as going out and proactively meeting with the clinics to get a sense of when the doctors are retiring. So the goal over the next number of years is to make sure that we know before the patients have to be actually informed, so we would have somebody lined up ready to go.
According to Desjardins, the goal is to streamline the process so that when a doctor retires, their patients are automatically re-rostered with another provider. Desjardins also highlighted the crucial role nurse practitioners will continue to play in addressing the doctor shortage across the province.
The increase in the number of nurse practitioners involved in the primary care is certainly quite exciting. There's significant change happening. In 2026, there's sort of a major change that will advance the billing opportunities for nurse practitioners, which will again change the opportunities for them. Right now, you're seeing nurse practitioner-led clinics. You're also seeing nurse practitioners better integrated into primary care clinics. So it is a really exciting time, and it is certainly something that is going to be critical for the Ontario Health System to address the challenge of unrostered patients.
Still, staff acknowledge the city's zero unattached residents goal won't come without challenges, especially as retirements continue and population growth outpaces recruitment.
We are working very hard. You will recognize that it is a moving target as the city continues to grow and we add new residents to the community. Many of those, the majority of those are not, don't have family doctors. So we are, that number is constantly ebbing and flowing. But I can say that with the four net new doctors that we signed just at the end of the summer, plus a innovation grant we issued that creates about 5,000 new positions. The Midtown Clinic is still rostering. They have about 5,000 patients to roster, I assume, as they move into their new location. And the OHT recently received funding from the province to roster another 3,500. So we have lots of capacity we're adding to adjust and meet the growing population.
Council unanimously approved the additional funding to sustain the momentum of the program. For those still without a family doctor, registering with Healthcare Connect remains the best way to get matched with a provider.
Every Kingstonian who lives in Kingston, they deserve a family doctor. And we will continue to work hard to make sure that everyone has it.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about a carbon removal agreement between Microsoft and UNDO that will make use of wollastonite mined from Sealy's Bay.
Thank you, Jesse. On Wednesday, October 21st, Undo, a UK-based carbon removal company, and Microsoft announced a new agreement to remove 28,900 tons of carbon dioxide by 2036. The project will utilize wollastonite sourced from the Canadian wollastonite mine near Sealy's Bay in a process known as enhanced rock weathering. By spreading finely crushed silicate rock on farmland, Undo accelerates a natural chemical reaction that captures CO2 from the atmosphere and stores it in a stable form in soil and groundwater for centuries. The agreement builds on Microsoft and Undo's ongoing collaboration, highlighting both the scalability of ERW as a climate solution and the role of financial innovation in unlocking large-scale carbon removal projects. Unlike traditional grant or equity funding, the new financing structure gives Undo upfront capital to scale ERW projects immediately using the long-term purchase agreement with Microsoft as security for repayment. By turning future carbon credit revenue into a bankable investable asset, this model removes the risk from large-scale ERW deployment, accelerates carbon removal projects in Ontario and beyond, and shows how financial innovation can unlock gigaton-scale climate solutions while supporting sustainable agriculture. Wollastonite, a calcium silicate mineral unique in Canada to the small eastern Ontario deposit, has become a sought-after ingredient in the emerging carbon removal industry. For Undo, the Kingston region offers both the geological and agricultural bases to scale up quickly. The St. Lawrence wollastonite deposit has been active for over a decade, but its environmental story is a quiet standout. The mine site features restored wetlands and protected wildlife areas, a rare distinction for an industrial operation. That ecological track record helped position Canadian wollastonite as a credible partner in carbon removal. From the mine, Undo trucks the crushed rock to farms across eastern Ontario from Napanee to Brockville. Farmers receive the mineral free of charge, part of Undo's model that exchanges rock application and field data for carbon credit revenue. The benefits aren't just environmental. According to local trials, wollastonite improves soil pH, strengthens crops against pests, and replenishes calcium and silicon, making the collaboration as much about soil health as climate repair. In May 2025, Queen's University reopened Nixon Field after replacing turf with a system embedding locally mined wollastonite beneath the playing surface. The goal, to turn the field itself into a small-scale carbon sink. That project marked one of the first instances of enhanced rock weathering being used by a municipality or institution in Canada. It demonstrates how Kingston's mix of research materials and community partnerships could make it a testbed for climate innovation. As the climate industry races to scale up, what's happening around Kingston could serve as a microcosm of how rural communities and global technology can intersect in the area of carbon removal. And thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a report from the LJI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, with a story about Gananoque Town Council's no-confidence vote in Mayor John Beddoes.
Thank you, Dinah. Gananoque Town Council has passed a vote of no confidence in Mayor John Beddoes. The motion, brought forward during last Tuesday's council meeting, received unanimous support from all six councillors. Gananoque Council is composed of six councillors and the mayor. Councillor David Osman says the decision was not made lightly. While the vote carries no formal policy weight, Osman said it was intended as a symbolic gesture to express council's collective concerns and encourage improved collaboration heading into the final year of the current term. Relations between the mayor and councillors have been strained in recent months, with differences in the council chamber frequently spilling over to social media. Points of contention have included an integrity commissioner's report in the spring that found multiple breaches of the municipal code of conduct on Beddoe's part, including harassment, discriminatory remarks, and aggressive behavior. Council voted to dock the mayor's pay, to which Beddoe's responded with a judicial review. More recently, the mayor and council have clashed over Beddoe's plans, embedded in a 2026 budget submission to clamp out-of-province vehicles for parking violations. The mayor later set aside the plan.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about changes to Greater Dauphiné's curbside collection program.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Residents of Greater Napanee will see a change in their recycling pickup on January 1st, 2026. Starting in the new year, Circular Materials Ontario will take over Greater Napanee's blue and gray bin programs. MTERRA Environmental will be collecting all recyclable materials. To help residents prepare for the transition, the town is holding information sessions on October 23rd and November 4th from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at 99 Advance Avenue. These sessions will provide an opportunity to learn about the transition, how it may impact residents, and how related concerns will be addressed in the new year. Deputy Director of Environmental Services, Growth and Infrastructure Services, Andrew Girouard, spoke about the changes for 2026 and the possibility of more changes in the coming years.
2026, residents should not see a change in their collection dates, the streams of recycling, or what recyclables are collected. Beyond 2026, Circular Materials Ontario and MTERRA can decide to change collection dates, routes, streams, how it's collected, so on and so forth.
CAO Matthew Grant explained challenges staff are facing and how they're moving forward in the new year.
There's going to be some change management challenges that will present themselves as this rolls out. One of the things that will be important for us is a pretty robust communications plan combined with a pretty significant advertising plan, just to ensure that people understand what we are and are not responsible for. We will need to make it clear for people what we are and are not able to do, because I appreciate some people will be coming to us to maybe look for us to assist and make sense of this. And unfortunately, we won't be in that position. And so it'll just be really important that we be clear with people about where they can go for the right information, who is now in charge of this, recycling more generally. And that work is already underway. I will give kudos to the team. It's a bit of a moving target. We're staying on top of the changes, which have been numerous.
Non-eligible sources such as industrial and commercial properties, not-for-profit organizations, municipal and government buildings, commercial farms, daycares, places of worship, campgrounds, and trailer parks will no longer receive curbside collection. Residents who live in mixed commercial and residential buildings will still receive curbside collection, while the commercial section of the building will not. The town will still be responsible for collecting garbage.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about local efforts to rejuvenate a community park in Wellington.
The weather was picture perfect last week for the celebration of the rejuvenation of the Wellington Park in Prince Edward County. The park is located along the shore of Lake Ontario and is the core of the downtown area where festivals, community activities, and families enjoy the space. The gardens have been neglected due to other municipal priorities, so the Wellington Community Association took up the challenge to rejuvenate the park. The group of volunteers canvassed for donations of plants, trees, and soil, planned and designed the area, and went to work. The rejuvenation was celebrated, and they received a certified wildlife habitat designation from the Canadian Wildlife Federation. Peter Hall is one of the organizers and talked about the project.
Thank you to all of you, because you've all had a part in this amazing rejuvenation of the Wellington Park. And why was it needed? It was full of weeds, it was overgrown, it was completely, completely unloved. We needed to do something about it. And WCA is an association that steps up where it sees need in Wellington. We applied for a grant to cover all of this wonderful things that were going to happen. And it was rejected. Yeah. We decided we were going to do it alone.
Do it anyway.
We decided we could go on. Yeah.
That's the county way.
We can do our job.
That's right. All of the trees are native and strategic, chosen by Lise and her group. And then we had an arborist from Lockyer's who actually placed the trees so that they are not in the middle of the park, so you can still have your frisbee and your football game, but they are so that you can also get some shade if you want to sit down for a picnic or a family gathering or whatever. These plants are native. They're used to drought, thankfully. They're used to cold, and what they'll do is next year they will fill out. Some of them in the shade are looking a little sad right now, but they're shade plants. They will take a little bit longer to get going, but it is absolutely wonderful to see the restoration and the rejuvenation of this park. To each one of you, a very sincere thank you. We honestly could not have done it without each of you participating in how you've done it. And I do want to say that we live in an outstanding community who's given generously to Wellington Community Association, we strive to make this village a place of beauty, a place for families and children, and for our visitors to come and enjoy, a place of quiet reflection, a place of frisbee or soccer, and we're very blessed, and we are all very, very grateful to you. And we've just received a certification from the Wildlife Federation of Canada for this park and the plants and the fact that they're native plants, so we are assisting with the ecology of the country, of the village, of the park.
Lisa Lindsay, Director of Recreation and Community Facilities, thanked the group.
I just thanked the Wellington Community Association because the Recreation Community Facilities Department is a pretty lean department with pages and pages of ideas, and having a group of people come together to work with us helps us meet the goals that we're trying to achieve in our parks.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story detailing the future of the Garden Hill Dam.
The Garden Hill Dam on the Ganaraska River is facing an uncertain future. The Ganaraska Region Conservation Authority, which built and owns the 66-year-old structure, said it is in need of significant repairs, but cautioned that if restoration does not proceed, the dam may need to be decommissioned. Corey Harris, Watershed Services Coordinator with the Environmental Group, presented to Port Hope Council Tuesday night, requesting funding for the two-year project. A 2023 dam inspection report found deficiencies and that installation of additional erosion protections, resealing the construction joints between the upstream wing walls and abatement walls, and replacing the deteriorating stop logs would be needed. The leakage from the bottom stop logs of the dam is now considered significant, as Harris suspects these stop logs were originally installed in 1959.
One of the big reasons that we're
we're bringing this forward now is that we've seen a rapid deterioration of the stop logs within the dam. Our concern here too is that at the current rate of deterioration, we're going to be in a position shortly where we're not going to be able to maintain a water level in this reservoir.
The Conservation Authority currently does not have the funding to complete the needed repairs to the dam and is requesting a cost sharing with Port Hope and the province, requiring the municipality to pay approximately $340,000. The dam and reservoir is home to fish, wildlife, turtles, and frogs, and is used by the Port Hope Fire Department. Year one of the repair process would comprise of environmental assessments and design, with the actual work itself taking place the following year. Harris outlined what decommissioning of the dam would look like, stating it would cost similar to repairing the structure, as much of the same repair preparation work would be done with decommissioning. While much of the questions from council focused on monetary commitments, several asked about decommissioning, with Harris explaining it would not be catastrophic to area wildlife.
To look at decommissioning, you know, it's not all bad. If we could get offline ponds, you could maintain some of that habitat. You could perhaps even get fish passage back through this area if we did a rocky ramp in the culvert. So there's pros and cons to each, but I know the local community is very attached to this reservoir.
Council did not make a decision on the proposal Tuesday night, rather to receive the presentation for informational purposes. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, October 30th, daytime high of 10 degrees with an overnight low of 6, mostly cloudy conditions. Friday, October 31st, Halloween, 61% chance of precipitation in the morning and afternoon, should clear up for trick-or-treating in the evening. Daytime high of 10 degrees, overnight low of 6. So bundle up if you're heading out with the little ones on the 31st. Saturday, November 1st, daytime high of 10, mostly sunny conditions. Sunday, November 2nd, daytime high of 10, mostly rainy conditions, 55% chance of precipitation. And then moving into the start of the first full week of November, Monday, November 3rd, daytime high of 11, overcast with rainy conditions, overnight low of 4 degrees.
Listings and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with a quick reminder from Public Services and Procurement Canada that the LaSalle Causeway will be closed on Sunday, November 2nd from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. That is closed to all pedestrian and vehicle traffic. In terms of road closures, Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess and Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Brass Point Bridge is closed October 29th and 30th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. each day for the replacement of bridge deck planks. Motorists are asked to plan their travel accordingly and to exercise caution in the area. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Kings Court Ave, concession to First Ave, is closed until November 21st for gas main installation. Ontario Street at Lower Union is closed October 27th at 8 p.m. to October 28th at 4 a.m. for the installation of commemorative crosswalks. Ontario Street at Lower Union is also closed October 29th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. for the unveiling of commemorative crosswalks. Queen Street, King to Ontario, is closed October 28th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. to complete asphalt restoration. Wellborn Avenue, Chelsea to Everett, is closed October 31st from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. for the Wicked Wellborn Block Party. And Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Ave. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Taylor Kidd Boulevard, Collins Bay to Coronation, expect delays beginning October 30th at 7 a.m. to November 7th at 7 p.m. for the replacement of two culverts. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.